Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And we begin the Monday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross here at Circus Sports, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, with former GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Mark Dominic, joining us back at his home in Nashville, Tennessee. Mark, how are you, my friend? Another wild weekend of NFL football, and we get two more games tonight, my man.
Yeah, two games tonight, which is a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that for sure. But it was a good, lots of scoring yesterday, as you saw in some of these games were just big shootouts. And you know, we had injuries yesterday. We had some huge performances. We had some records that were broken. So it was a very fun day to watch football. And certainly we're seeing that separation in some of these conferences of who's going to make the postseason, who isn't. But I think we're going to have good games all the way through these last few weeks.
Yeah, I agree. Three more weeks to go in the regular season. Again, those two games tonight to round out this week. We're going to have Rich Gannon join us here in hour number two. Of course, our former MVP quarterback, to always get his Monday morning perspectives on what he saw from the quarterback position and beyond. But, Mark, I do want to start with what we saw last night. And that would be a really dominant performance. And I got to be honest, I was on the wrong side of this one last night. I really did like Seattle all week coming in and then realized 14-0 in that first quarter. Uh-oh, wrong side here. This is all one-way traffic for Green Bay. And really, the news got worse than just the loss for Seattle as Geno Smith gets knocked out of this one with a knee injury. Don't know the full status yet of Geno going forward. But, Mark, what's your takeaway from it? Is it, uh-oh, Seattle's in trouble? The Rams now obviously are the favorites to win that division. Or Green Bay might be a notch away from being one of those elite teams in the NFC.
Dave, there's a little bit of both there. And I think I start with where the Seattle Seahawks are and know that the final week of the regular season, they play the Rams, which is going to be a tremendous game. Here's the difference. The Rams are getting healthier and the Seahawks are getting less healthy. And that's a real huge thing going down the stretch. We're going to talk about some other teams that are kind of dealing with the exact same thing. And so I think it's uh-oh big time for the Seattle Seahawks as they try to finish up the season. And then when you look at the Green Bay Packers and you see what they've been able to do, it's going to be amazing. Whoever comes out of that North Division with the you know the number one seed or the actual number two or number three, but the two other teams that should make it are going to be just giant killers in terms of if you have to play them in the first round of the playoffs, that's going to be a very hard game. But Green Bay, to me, and I've said this since the beginning of the season because I worked with Jeff Hafley back in Tampa. He was my DB coach when I was the GM. He's the defensive coordinator. He's an excellent, excellent football coach, and he's going to be a guy that's going to start getting interviews for head coaching jobs already just 1 year back in the National Football League from Boston College. The thing that I think is the most important thing is it just goes back. You know, Dave, we've talked about this for years, the devaluation of running backs. I wonder with what Saquon Barkley's been able to do and what Josh Jacobs has been able to do, if maybe people are starting to look at that going, maybe we should start to think about this a little bit harder because of the impact those two players have had on their team. That's the whole reason I think both those teams are really in the position they are today.
Yeah, Joe Barry, who was the defensive coordinator there last year, and they made that change, as you mentioned, to Hafley. And it does seem to be making all the difference in the world. Then you get some really talented rookies on the defensive side of the ball, too. They're getting younger. They didn't even have Jair Alexander out there. They're expecting to get him back. So you mentioned teams getting healthy down the stretch. This Packer team, I mean, their only losses here, Mark, in the entire season are to teams right now that they're looking up at, right? They've lost twice to the Lions, of course, and that's why there's still an extreme long shot to win this division. It does feel like a two-horse race with Detroit and Minnesota, but they've also lost to Minnesota. So you start to look at the Packers and get, boy, if this defense is coming of age, and it looks like it is, and I don't know what I make of Jordan Love, but last night, at least in that first quarter, Mark, they don't ask him to do too much with Josh Jacobs back there, too. They got talented receivers everywhere. They might have to go on the road in the postseason now with their four losses here. But again, elite competition. And the Eagles, that's that week one loss that they had back there in Mexico City, in Brazil. So it's only two to the Lions, one to the Eagles, and a two-point loss at home to the Vikings. I mean, this team is really, if you look at it in that context, like in the college football playoff, those are not bad losses over the course of 14 games.
They're not. And I think that's why I really like this Packers team. And it's probably one of the youngest teams in the NFL, too. You look at the offensive side and the skill players around Jordan Love, and they're all babies. Year one, year two, year three. And that's without Luke Musgrave being back in the lineup. There's a chance he gets back here in a couple weeks as well. Put him in there, that two tight end combination that they have, and boom, things are really cooking. So they still have upside potential that's showing up in front of them. Yet I agree with you. I think it's a long shot for them to win the division. But if Tampa holds on to, say, the four seed and they got to go to, you know, they play the Green Bay Packers, the Battle of the Bay, it's going to be a great run. So, I mean, this is a really good football team who I think is hitting, like you said, hitting their stride and certainly playing very consistent throughout the entire season. And that's a testament to Jordan Love. That's a testament to the offensive coaches. But I think that's a bigger testament to Jeff Hafley and what he's able to do on the defensive side to get all the pressures and the turnovers like they caused last night against Geno Smith.
You know, I want to bring up one thing on the backup quarterback front, and that they were able, when Jordan Love was dinged up early in the year, and they made that trade right before the regular season to get Malik Willis. And he won a couple key games there. They were ugly, like Colts and Titans and that sort of thing. But they kind of got him through until where Jordan Love could come back. And now his health is showing. Conversely for Seattle, it didn't look pretty with Sam Howell when he had to come into the game last night. And I'm sure in D.C. people were like, oh, man, I'm so glad we got Jaden Daniels. And look, no disrespect to Sam Howell. But what do you do if Geno's knee can't go forward here? And you're still tied mathematically here with the Rams, although the Rams have vaulted to be the favorites now to win this division going forward because of their health, as you mentioned, getting healthier. They're now $1.50. The Rams, you got to lay $1.50. Seattle's now plus 235, even though they have the same record. And the Cardinals saved their season with a win over the Patriots, so they're plus 550. Can Seattle survive with Sam Howell, or does it have to be Geno, even if it's one bad leg, to have a shot here down the stretch?
Dave, I feel like they can't survive with Sam. I mean, I know that they're going to have to find a way to really control the ball on the ground and just, like, grind out a victory. But the problem is, even when Geno Smith gets back, and again, I point to the final week of the regular season when they play the Rams, that's going to be probably a very huge game. And I think that's where they're going to have to win that one to get in a tie spot. I think they're going to lose some ground here. I think that Sam Howell, the problem is we've seen a lot. And there was a lot to kind of hope for and believe in. But the reality is when it's happening fast in the National Football League, he's not triggering quick enough. He's a good athlete. He's still a young guy that's worth working on. But when you have to rely on him right now down the stretch in late December, that's a bad place to be, as you know. And so I think this is a really tough blow for Seattle. It's not like Geno Smith, to me, is setting the world on fire this year, but he's so stable and consistent. This is going to be more of a roller coaster with Sam Howell. So you might get a good first quarter, but I think you're going to get bad four quarters. And I think that's going to be the problem for them, even though there's a lot of talent around him. I still feel like the big problem here is going to be they've got to find a way to get the running game to take that pressure off of Sam Howell so he can use his legs to run and use the running backs to run to try to, you know, control the clock and control the game that way.
Yeah, you got to hope that Kenneth Walker can get back in there to help out Charbonnet because you're right. It does not look good right now. And again, Minnesota would be coming out there next week. That will be no easy task no matter who the quarterback is. We saw what the quarterback did for the Buffalo Bills, and that's Josh Allen and his number now to win MVP. I think we're looking at minus 700. I mean, it's getting ridiculous now. It just looks like far and away. I can't imagine what the next 3 weeks look like. Who could pry away MVP? But 48 points in a win. This is 42 last week in a loss to the Rams. We're putting up 90 points in 2 weeks against LA and the Lions here, and they get the win by six. I know some people are looking at Dan Campbell. I talk about Dan Campbell all the time. Love the guy, but sometimes I don't understand some of the decisions. We can get into that a little bit. What's your takeaway from this wild shootout here that Buffalo ultimately comes out on the right side of?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what Josh Allen is doing and some of the throws he makes, what he does with his body, the positions he put this football team in. He's putting everything on his shoulders. He's carrying him down the field. It's more scary on the defensive side, like what's going on with the Buffalo Bills defensively, because you don't want to be in these kind of shootouts, not consistently, obviously, because that just tells you on a track meet, you want to find a way to get some stops. So I'm a little more worried about the Buffalo defense, and I'm ecstatic about the Buffalo offense. Amari Cooper didn't even post yesterday. Like, imagine when he's going to be part of the team, what that also could mean to this offense. And so as you look at the big picture, I've been a Bills fan since the beginning of the season. Staying that way, I think it's a special year for Buffalo, finally. I think Kansas City, as we'll get into later, is finding ways to win. But I think in the end, that's going to come back and maybe be an Achilles heel for them. I think Buffalo's just tremendous, right? Yeah. And that's including missing what the shortest field goal in the NFL this year early in the game. I mean, this is a team that to me finds the resiliency and finds ways to, like, not only get ahead, but if when a team kind of pushes back, they continue to push forward. So I really like what the Buffalo Bills are doing. I think he's MVP. The only player I think that could take that away from him and he didn't have a great game yesterday, but that's credit to the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, is Saquon Barkley. If Saquon can get on that track, which he still is, to get the 2,000 plus yards, then I think Saquon Barkley has a very fair argument to say, wait a second, as good as he is, guys don't do what I do.
Wow. And again, right now, Saquon's 13-1. Allen, is you're seeing in some shops, he's up to -900 in this Most Valuable Player award. So it'd be fascinating if something would go awry for the last 3 weeks for Allen. But I like that you say it's Saquon and not necessarily Lamar, who had 5 touchdowns in the Ravens win yesterday. Very quickly, the Eagles, you mentioned them, and Saquon did get dinged up a little bit in this one. 27-13 winners over the Steelers, so the under cashes for 43 with only 40 points scored, and the Eagles do cover that 5.5 in the Battle of Pennsylvania. What's your takeaway here? Because I've almost felt like, man, Pittsburgh's going in for potentially the tying score in the third quarter, and then Najee Harris just fumbles a simple toss back by Russell Wilson, and it flipped the whole game. It felt like, I didn't feel like the Steelers were as far away as the final score indicated.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, I know the Steelers have been working with Najee Harris. I know, you know, people that watch Najee Harris sometimes can get frustrated. They see potential, but he never quite takes himself to another level as a running back. And I think that showed up yesterday, obviously, with a huge turnover that I think, too, impacted this football game. The story of the game to me was Jalen Hurts. And you could see his chip on his shoulder when he came out for the press conference afterwards. Like, he's an angry young man who right now who's like tired of taking all the criticism on. And so I think that this is going to be interesting to see how the whole team kind of rallies around when Jalen had to make the play. Steelers defense is exceptional. And I still think the Steelers, once they get George Pickens back, what a difference that will make, I think, for their football team. Clearly, they missed him yesterday dramatically. And I think when you add all that back up together, I think the Steelers defense is good enough to say, be careful about them. They could beat anybody at any time. And once they get Pickens back on the football field, you know you've got a little bit more wiggle room in terms of scoring. Credit to the Philadelphia Eagles. I agree. I thought this was going to be a lower scoring game just because of the two defenses and the way they're playing. But I'm impressed by what they've done.
Jalen Hurts has got a broken finger. Maybe he needs to break another one. He played lights out with that ring finger being broken. Much more to get to, Mark. Just getting it started here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back alongside Mark Dominic, I am Dave Ross. This is the Lombardi Line here on VSiN. Mark, the playoff picture is getting a little bit more clear. There still could be some chaos to ensue, as we normally see traditionally throughout the league in the final 3 weeks, Mark. But let's get into it, because I want to start off in the AFC. And despite that loss to the Eagles, as we mentioned in the last segment, the Steelers did clinch a playoff spot now at 10-4. So they are in. Buffalo, of course, is long in, as they already won the AFC East a week ago, and Kansas City has already wrapped up their division as well. So you see the Texans there, they have already wrapped up their division at 9-5. So wild card at worst for the Steelers. The Z's on your graphic here mean you've already clinched the division. X means you're in. So we got 4 in and 3 division winners. Steelers can wrap this thing up, the division that is, next week with a win against the Ravens. Broncos get a big win to go to 9-5, comeback fashion over Elliott Bowman, our producer's Colts. And they are now in the 8th spot. And the Chargers here, eesh, what happened yesterday? They get slapped around, giving up 40 to the Bucks, and they're now 8-6, but still a 2-game lead with 3 to play. Is this all cemented in your mind? Are those the top 7 that we will see in the AFC playoff picture? Or is there trouble really maybe for the Chargers going forward? And the Bengals at 6-8, who the Chargers did beat, they'd have to hope that LA loses all 3, the Bengals win all 3. That might be too much to ask, right?
It feels like too much to ask. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Chargers still pay the Patriots and the Raiders. Yeah. And so you got to look at the Chargers and go, how do we not win? So that loss against the Chargers was huge, because Cincinnati is clearly the best team that's on the outside looking in right now. And I just think it's too big of a hill. I always say, like, until a team gets the 9 losses, they're in the hunt. But right now, I think the AFC's settled. Now there's just a little bit of pecking order we're working through. But I think those 7 teams are the 7 teams. I don't see the Colts getting a way in. Sorry, Elliot. I don't see a way that the Dolphins are going to get in. And I certainly would like to see the Bengals, because I think they deserve to be a playoff team based off what Joe Burrow's done on that football team. But they're obviously going to be on the outside looking in, too. So in the AFC, I think we're really set. I mean, you talked about it, and I think this is the game of the week, maybe next week, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Baltimore Ravens. I mean, that's going to be everything, because, as much as I like the Steelers. And I think a lot of credit needs to go to Mike Tomlin. A lot of people were down on the Steelers walking into the season going, this is finally the end of the Mike Tomlin 500 or better career. And suddenly he's catapulted them into the postseason 10-4. And like you said, a win next week and they're division champions. That's an amazing job by Mike Tomlin, what he's been able to do there. I got to give credit to Omar Khan and some of the guys that they've drafted as the GM as well. So that's a team that's, you know, certainly outperformed, I think, a lot of people's expectation. I'm sure early in the season, before the season started, over, under, and wins, I guarantee the Steelers are producing well in that category.
Oh, yeah.
And so now I look at this whole thing and say, I think we're at the seven teams. I just think, can the Ravens surpass the Steelers? I do think there's a chance that based off of how Lamar Jackson's playing and how Derrick Henry's looked.
Okay, let's get back to that point you just made about Mike Tomlin. Because, right, they've already gone over their win total of the year, which was 8.5. So they've already got 10. If I said to you this summer that after 14 weeks, the Steelers would be a game up on the Ravens and already be in the playoffs and the Ravens are not, and yet Tomlin's 10-1 to win Coach of the Year, KOC in Minnesota, I get it. Right now, he's the favorite. Dan Campbell's the second betting choice there. What does Mike Tomlin have to do to win a Coach of the Year award? Like, what am I missing, Mark? Because I cannot believe, like, to me, if they beat the Ravens next week and they win this division that everybody is picking Cincinnati all summer long, how in the world at 10-1 is that not shorter number? Like, why isn't that 3-1?
I don't disagree with you, Dave. I think you're right. And if they beat the Ravens, I bet you that number drops quickly because of where they are. And you're right. You know, the Bengals were certainly a team that everybody thought was going to be a postseason team. I did too. Cleveland came from the postseason. You thought, well, they'd be a lot more competitive. How brutal is this division going to be? And yet here's the Pittsburgh Steelers at 10-4, and Mike Tomlin just continues to get it done and overhauling the most important position on your football team, quarterback, and resetting the whole thing in the offseason. That's tremendous. But I think, you know, when you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, you look what they've been able to do. I think that if they can beat the Ravens, I think Tomlin quickly shoots up the chart. As good as Dan Campbell's done, I think people expect it. It's like Sean McDermott or Andy Reid. Like, why wouldn't they be Coach of the Year? Because people expect it. No one expected the Steelers to be in this spot. And with one more win, I think he catapults up the list and has a chance at winning it.
Can I get an amen? I see it the exact same way. I do not have that ticket, America. I'm not on the stump for Mike Tomlin for my ticket. I don't own that ticket. I just can't believe he's 10-1 right now and they could beat the Ravens next week and win that division. The NFC, it does feel a little bit more clear here with the Commanders getting that win yesterday. 20-19, by the way, didn't cover the number against the Saints, but they do hold on to get the win. They're the 7th seed right now. We talked about the Packers knocking on the door. That's a playoff team, 10-4. But not mathematically in yet. You see the Vikings, they did get in technically at least as a wild card. But what's interesting now, if they win tonight, Mark, they will be tied with Detroit at 12-2 in first place in this NFC. And they do have a game at the end of the year. It is in Detroit. And the Lions did win that first matchup. But all of a sudden, and you see the Eagles there primed at that 2 spot. Do you feel like that Eagles, they haven't lost in forever, 2-2, and that they're on a 10-game winning streak. Is that number one seed really in play? And I do think it would make a big difference if, for instance, Detroit had to go to Philadelphia versus the other way if it got down to that in the playoffs.
Well, I think home field, when you're talking about Philly versus Lions in terms of home field, what a big difference that really, truly is. And especially for the Lions to be able to play fast like they do on defense, and especially in that secondary in the back end, you know, I think it's a critical part for Detroit to hold on to it. So I think it's absolutely in play. And for Philadelphia, you know, to be right on the doorstep now and be able to take that over, tremendous job by Nick Sirianni, the guy that everybody was like, maybe we'll get him fired week 2 or week 3. He's kind of found a way to really rally this troop and put a lot together. You know, I, when I look at this, it's hard for me to see anybody kind of jump up. I'm excited for the Arizona Cardinals in terms of what they'll put on tape this year based off the jump that they've had. But I think, again, it's a little too late. I think the Rams are the team that I'm really confident about, and I think they're going to be a very dangerous team in the postseason that you don't want to have to deal with. And I think we'll see tonight with the Atlanta Falcons what they can do against the Raiders. But I sit there and say the Bucs should be able to hold on to that just based off of, you know, the strength of their schedule, that what they have left to deal with. And that's going to push Atlanta out of it. I think that we see the 7 teams in the NFC as well. Seattle, I think, with this injury to Geno Smith, even if he's not 100% in plays, I think it's going to be too much for them to overcome. And I think, again, It's about positioning, like we talked about. But I think, sadly, I think the seven teams are pretty much locked in my opinion, with only 3 weeks to go.
That's fascinating because normally we don't get that, right? We don't get this kind of clear delineage of teams that we think are going to be on the right side of this bubble versus the outside. But it could very well be that cemented right now. I look at the futures market here and I see Philadelphia +210, Detroit +210 to win the NFC. And that makes perfect sense because we don't know who the one seed's going to be. Right, so it feels like a toss-up there. Then the Vikings and the Packers are both there at 7-1. Now, theoretically, Mark, that's we're almost saying they're not going to, at least the Vikings, get that one seed, so you'd play at home. When you look at that, right, for teams that could go on the road in the postseason from what you've seen, can Minnesota go on the road and win one or two games? And I feel like Green Bay at 7-1 would be the team that – battle-tested, as we mentioned, four really good losses to teams all above them right now, the Lions, Eagles, and Vikings. That's the only teams that have beaten Green Bay. Is there anybody else, or do you think it would only be those two that could actually make some noise if they had to go via the wild card route?
Yeah, I mean, I would think those two. I mean, the Commanders are tricky, you know, just because of, you know, what Jaden Daniels can do and what Dan Quinn's been able to do. So they're still a really tough out with – I know the game yesterday – Commanders seem like they're in complete control. They make the change at quarterback. We'll get into that a little bit later. But the Commanders still are a team when Jaden Daniels hot and they've got the system running with Cliff Kingsbury. That's still not a fun team to play. So I think the NFC's, I mean, I love where we are with the playoffs. These are really good football teams. And I think we've seen a lot of disparity. We've got a lot of 2-win and 3-win teams in the NFL. And that's why I have so many 10-plus win teams already. So you look at that, you're like, wow, that's impressive. Now, when you go back to who can win the division, I lean towards, or who win the NFC, I lean towards the Philadelphia Eagles will end up with the number one seed. Ooh. And the reason why I do that is they play the Commanders, which is obviously going to be tough. They play the Dallas Cowboys, and then they play the New York Giants. And I think those are three more wins that are very probable, where I think Detroit has a tougher road the rest of the way now. So I lean towards the Eagles and what they've been able to accomplish, that they'll hold on and actually get to the number one seed overall. I'd rather be on that bet than the other.
10 wins in a row. We saw Nick Sirianni trying to get after it with Jalen Carter after a personal foul call in that Steeler game yesterday. The D-line coach kind of gets in Sirianni's way. Mark, do you make anything of that? Is that something that a GM needs to have a talk with the coaching staff today, or is that like, let those guys settle it out themselves?
Yeah, you let them settle it out. You know, emotions run so high. You know, having had a chance to be on NFL sidelines for a long time and just feeling what's going on out there, you understand there's going to be times where things get out of control, where things get a little bit nasty. Today, I guarantee you they're hugging in the locker room and everything's fine. And I think that's what, you know, you just see those things happen. It's not great, but it's not going to, you know, tear anybody apart. I think Philadelphia's riding that win train so well that these are bygones. They lost 10 in a row. This is a problem, right? Winning heals everything.
Winning does. And again, you can win with Pick 6 on DraftKings, official partner of the NBA. All you have to do, new Pick 6 players, play $5. You're going to get $50 in Pick 6 credits. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now. Use code VSIN, that's VSIN, for new customers. Play 5, get 50 in Pick 6 credits only on DraftKings Pick 6. When we come back, we've got a lot more to get to in the NFL, including we'll go back to those Buccaneers and Mark's whole team talk about the Bucs. They're getting hot. That's next year in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSIN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Monday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Mark Dominic here with you. And Mark, your old stomping grounds down there in Tampa. The Buccaneers, you know, sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. I was dead wrong. I thought the Chargers would have after that heartbreaking defeat against Kansas City a week ago, get back home. They get a turnover early in this game on Baker Mayfield, rather, and they have a 17-10 halftime lead. Everything looks good for the Chargers. They give up 30 points in the second half, and they don't score nary a point. It's all Tampa Bay, 40-17, in dominating fashion to get this one done. I always talk about this, Mark, a lot. I don't know why Todd Bowles doesn't get more credit down there in Tampa. Like, the coaching job he's done post-Brady, to me, has been pretty darn good. They're in position again to win the NFC South, rather, after this convincing win. Did it surprise you? Because it did surprise me. And Baker Mayfield, 22 of 27, 288, rushed for 25 more, had four touchdowns and then interception early, but really rebounded well from it. What's your takeaway here? Chargers defense collapsing, or maybe the Bucs are a little bit better than people think?
I think it's a combination, right? I think that they found a really good running back combination, and Bucky Irvin's been a great addition to this football team with White. It gives them a 1-2 punch that they have, and both of them can catch the ball out of the backfield. I think that's been unheralded. Like, Bucky Irvin's been a tremendous impact to this team. I think you spoke about it, Baker Mayfield. And Todd Bowles has done a great job, right? Mm. You thought as soon as Brady's out, these guys are going back to the basement, and they just haven't. They decided they're going to stay in it. And as we talked about it in the break a little bit, Mike Evans, well, he looked like a rookie out there, just brand new, fresh, and going all about. So it's, I think the, where I look at it from the Chargers' perspective, what's going wrong, right, is I still think they're going to make the postseason. Two things. Secondary-wise, huge, huge problems in that secondary. Clearly, they can't handle the big guys, and they're struggling there. And then offensively, for a guy like Harbaugh, who I've known for a long time, to not run the ball and not be effective running the football at all, even when you have a lead or something like that, is such a reverse of what I thought he would do. I thought as soon as he got the lead, he'd just keep shoving the ball. And they're still trying to throw the ball around a little bit, and they're missing one more player in offense that can really kind of make them more dynamic. And I think that's been the whole thing with the Chargers. So secondary problem, Bucs running game is good. The defense played well. Levante David had another big game for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Overall, I thought the same thing. I thought when the start of the game, I thought this is probably going to be the win for the Chargers, and the Bucs are going to need some help still down the stretch. They dominated the second half, and now Tampa Bay, I think, is looking in the rearview mirror for the NFC South.
Yeah, and for somebody that's sitting on a ticket, adjusted win total over 9.5. I really wanted this one yesterday for the Chargers. You got to win 2 out of 3 down the stretch now, so it's getting a little bit dicey here for Harbaugh and company. But the Buccaneers now vaulted to -550 to win this division. Falcons, we'll talk about that game, obviously, in greater detail as the show goes on. +390 to win this division, a division that looked like the Falcons had a stranglehold on early in the year, but they have just hit the skids here, 4 straight losses. But props to the Bucs, man. They just figure out a way. I guess you could say the same about the Commanders yesterday. They figure out a way to get a win down south in New Orleans, 20-19. Now, I think the point that people are talking about here, depending on the number, if you were laying 7, 7.5, you thought, all right, well, I'm going to get a push because it's going to be 20-13 is going to be the final if you got the 7, you laid the 7. But we had some clock issues down the stretch, apparently, in New Orleans, that allowed for one more play. The Saints then scored on that one more play and then had an untimed down here with 2-point conversion to try to win it. Comes up short. But, Mark, you went back and looked at it. Did they get this wrong? Should time have run out here?
Yeah, I think the officials did get this wrong. I don't even know what would make that official stop the clock. When you watch it, Dave, it is very uncomfortable because it's in the middle of the field. There's no debate. It's not near the sideline or anything. You're like, why would he stop the clock? It doesn't even make sense. It shows you that officials are humans too, because that was a critical error by an official. Almost reprehensible, like almost like you've got to suspend the official for a game or two just to make a point that we can't be that wrong. We can't make that big of a mistake. And then when you watch the clock, and I ran it back multiple times, and you start to do the countdown, I don't think they get a chance to even clock the game. I think the game's over. Mm. I think the ball is not snapped in time. I don't think he's going to be able to get it down. I think it's going to be at 0-0-0, and the game's over. Now it's a 7-point line. So, I think, as the game was over, the press reporters came over and talked to the officials, and they're like, obviously you shouldn't have done that. What a mistake. But it's not a reviewable call, and therefore, there's nothing more we can say about it. So it's just a huge error, and certainly could have affected a lot of money lines if you were at 7 points. You're right. And I think if it would have just played out the normal way, I think the game's 20-13.
You know what? You look at this thing, too, and I'm looking here. The Commanders now to make the playoffs, -650, right? So you got to lay. If they lose that game, think about where that number drops down to because of a bad officiating call here or for inexplicably stopping the clock. So thankfully, at least the Commanders in that regard didn't get hosed all the way. But if you're a Commanders backer and you laid 7, you're like, that should have been a push. Yes, it should have been a push to Mark's point here that the time should have expired. The other quick point, you and I talked a little bit about during the break here, Mark, and I get it. Like, the Saints, what are you playing for? Darren Rizzi makes the quarterback change, goes away from Jay Kaner, goes back to Spencer Rattler. I don't know why they made that decision in the first place. But I think you and I were in unison. It might be unpopular, but we're thinking kick the tying extra point and go to overtime. You've got all the momentum in the world. Rattler's playing well. Commanders are struggling to stop you. Were you surprised, or did you feel like it was the mentality of Rizzi of like, nah, let's go ahead and win this thing right here, and we made this great comeback. Let's not go to a coin toss in overtime.
Yeah, you know, I struggle with this one, and I'm a huge fan of Darren Rizzi, and I think he does have a chance to hold on to this job. I think that there's a lot of people within the organization that are fans of him. He was interviewing for the job originally, and so I think that this is his opportunity. I personally think in that situation, because you basically gave the Commanders the first half and said, hey, whatever happens, happens. And for them in the second half, Rattler was, you know, not completing, but he was making the big plays when he had to. I do think it's easy, and again, it's Monday morning. I do think it's better to kick that extra point and say, hey, look, I believe in you guys. Like, we've got the momentum on our side. And I know the Commanders are good. And I know at the end, if the Commanders would have got the ball at 20-20 and go down the field and score, everybody would be like, Rizzi, why didn't you go for two? Because I could sit at the press conference, if I'm Rizzi, and I sit there and say, I believed in our players that we could win the game in overtime. It didn't happen that way, but that's how much confidence I have in this football team. I think that's a great message instead of saying we wanted to get the win and go for it. So I think, you know, in this situation, you know, it's not 50-50. I think the better move was you had momentum going. You put a team against the ropes that you're not even supposed to be playing against with two different quarterbacks. One's a rookie and you still have a shot. I think you kick the extra point and you see what you can do in overtime.
Agreed. I sign off on that. I know people are right now going, no, you go for two. What are you guys talking about? I love that message. Our defense is playing better. They didn't. Well, they had two field goals, I think, in the second half. They were really shutting down the Commanders defensively there in the second half, too. So I'm with you, Mark. I was thinking in real time, kick it. But everybody knows I'm old curmudgeon and I just want to kick it and play some defense, too. By the way, if you are looking to bet smarter, we got you covered here. And a great deal, a holiday special here at VSiN. So VSiN Pro Access, you're going to get everything you need to bet smarter all the way through May 1st in this holiday special, just $79. So every expert for every major sport. I know Jonathan Davis out there, if you're a hockey head, he's got you covered. Exclusive betting splits. We got expert leaderboards there. So all you have to do is go to VSiN.com/subscribe. It is a limited time offer, so I would urge you, encourage you to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for just $79. I want to talk a little bit about the Texans because I feel like yesterday was more about the Dolphins and what they were not able to do in this 8-point loss here, 20-12, and maybe kind of write them off for the rest of the year. But conversely, maybe it's not pretty. You know, we just talked about, you know, playing some defense and, you know, 20 points was enough to win for the Commanders. 20 points is enough to win for the Texans. What'd you make of this win? Because I feel like people aren't sold on Houston, but yet here they are, division winners, and going back to the postseason, 2-for-2 for C.J. Stroud. You know, this is pretty impressive what they're starting to do with D'Amico Ryans and company.
I think it's tremendous what D'Amico Ryans has done. How hard it is to get to this position back-to-back to win the South, you know, just goes back to showing you how important that draft has been for them, and they've done a really good job of hitting those high picks. Boy, that's a big deal. And then even prior to, like, we saw Stingley yesterday make big interceptions down the stretch, and I think that's a big part of it. This was more about Tua, though, to me. This was more about all the turnovers that Tua had. It was a really tough day for him. I think it's his career record in terms of how many turnovers he had in the game, and that speaks volumes to what the Houston Texans are doing on defense, right? I think that's the big piece of the puzzle here. And so, you know, I think Houston finds ways physically to be out-muscling you on the defensive side. I think it's big that Stingley kind of had that kind of opportunity where he's trying to battle Tyreek Hill and wins the battle, which is a tremendously, you know, difficult, you know, chore for any DB in the National Football League. But, you know, offensively, I think where they are, even without Stephon Diggs, basically, you know, the second half of the season, Nick Collins has just been a stud and just a great player. And when it comes to push to shove, he makes the plays. And when you throw the ball to him, he's going to find a way to beast it and get it and score. And so this is a good football team. I don't think they're a deep run in the postseason type of good, but I think they're a good football team that will make for a really good first round of the division. I think, can they win that game?
You draft well, you make a good coaching change, and it's worked out so far, 2-for-2 for Houston. By the way, we're going to get to Patrick Mahomes' injury here because it is a high ankle sprain. We don't know about his status for next week, but when we come back, Mark, you've had this before throughout your history. We have some guys stepping into your office and see what message you have for them on this Monday. That's next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, Dave Ross and Mark Dominic here. Mark, I'm going to have some people show up at your office here momentarily. But one guy that's been in some offices recently is Devondre Campbell. And it looks like his services in San Francisco are at least no longer required in this sense, Mark. The breaking news here is the Niners have decided to suspend Campbell for the remaining three games of the regular season, but not cut him. Can you tell the people what this move is by John Lynch and company in the decision to suspend rather than release?
Well, I'd sit there and say a couple things. Campbell's a veteran, and so every once in a while, a veteran can say claim his last salary if he thinks it might be the last games he plays. Devondre Campbell has to know that more than likely, the NFL's done. Like, he just made the move to kill his NFL career. So what did the 49ers do? Instead of, like, just cutting him and now he could try to claim those last three games as pay, they suspend him. And so now he does not get paid for those last three games. So it's a really shrewd move, but a fair move that the 49ers can do without saying, hey, look, you're out. Now, if somehow, because the 49ers are still mathematically alive, they get to the postseason, they can cut him for the postseason and move him off the roster. But what they've done here is they've made sure no matter what, Devondre, you're not getting any money, and we're not paying you any more money, and we'll never have to bring you back in the locker room. So it was kind of a boom, boom, double whammy hit to Devondre Campbell, but I think that's what they felt like in the game as well.
Well said. So people are wondering, why didn't you just cut him? That's why they didn't cut him. It's actually a harsher move, if you will. Like, you didn't play for us when we needed you in a game we had to win to try to become postseason eligible. This is going to be the recourse here by the Niners. So, again, Campbell officially suspended for the remaining three games of the regular season. We know that being a pro football head coach is hard, or quarterback in the NFL. It's not easy. But hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. If you're ever injured, you can check out Morgan & Morgan. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They've got over 100 offices nationwide, more than 1,000 lawyers. Submitting an injury claim with Morgan & Morgan is easy. If you're ever injured, you can check out Morgan & Morgan. Their fee is free unless they win. For more info, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial #law#529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets or #law#529 from your cell. This is a paid advertisement. Now, Mark, stepping into your office here on this Monday is Dan Campbell. Now, I get it, Mark. We play the way we play. We make our decisions, and that's the way we play. Sometimes the way you play doesn't always get you W's. We saw it in the title game last year against the Niners. We went for an onside kick here, double digits still on the clock, only down 10. Three more defenders, you lose to injury here. What's the message to Dan Campbell on this Monday? Is it about what's been happening or what's going to happen in the remaining three games?
Yeah, it's going to be, what can we do to make sure that this bug doesn't continue to get deeper? How can we kind of limit some of the practices on a Wednesday and a Thursday and a Friday? Even though he may not want to do that, I think that's the way I've got to talk to Coach Campbell. It's like, we can't afford any more injuries. If we've lost a Lane McNeil now for the rest of the season and the postseason, that's a devastating blow. So I'm trying to see, Coach Campbell, how can we take the load off this team so we don't have anything else happen the rest of the way? Because we have a special football team here. And even though injuries are unpredictable, we could still take the pressure off of our guys on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. How can we limit the load? I think that's the most important thing you've got to do. And it's not just Dan Campbell. That's what you're thinking about across the board. And a lot of GMs have to do that for the head coach, because the head coach is like in that mindset of like, hey, you know, this is how we got here. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to win. And I don't want to, you know, put the gas down on the pedal. In this situation, because it's so critical to stay healthy down the stretch, you've got to find ways to protect your club from themselves or from the coaches from themselves. And so that's the big message I'm having with him. It's not so much the game management. I'm going to let him live and die because of how aggressive he is. And we all seen that, you know, he's certainly aggressive on fourth downs in different situations. But I do want to see if we can manage the team, because the injuries are going to be critical. And this could really cost us the run that I think we can have in Detroit.
That is very interesting. Hey, coach. Just maybe back off a little bit during the practice week. Another coach that would be a very tough message, Mark, that's going to step into your office and might have to have a similar conversation, is a guy you know very well, Jim Harbaugh. Harbs and company, they get slapped around by the Bucs. Oof, 40-17 at home. Offense has been held under 20 points in three straight games. They're trying to hold on to that final wild card spot. They better win 2 out of 3 for my ticket. What's the message to Coach Harbs today on a very disappointing Monday?
Yeah, I kind of go back to what I alluded to earlier. Like, let's get reestablished on the ground. Let's figure out how do we start to control the game a little bit more, much in the Harbaugh mode of, like, I like to run the football, right? I mean, remember last year, J.J. McCarthy, everybody's like, you know, he didn't do anything. They just ran the football all day long, and he's not that great of a quarterback. Turns out he's pretty good, or looked like he's going to be pretty good. And that's such a Harbaugh, mentality. And so I think I'm going to go back in there and say, hey, look, let's talk about the offensive line. Let's talk about the offensive running game. Let's take some pressure off for Justin Herbert, who, you know, obviously can handle it. I have no questions about Justin. But when you look around the skill set, you know, Josh Palmer's still only getting like one target a game, you know, and it's just, it feels like Ladd McConkey's come in and done very well, but I just don't feel like they can just rely on that right now, because I don't think the players, maybe it's an a la minimal like Patriots, so the Patriots have no one around Drake May to help him. I don't feel like this is a great team, so in terms of the skill guys around their quarterback, but I do think you've got to pound the ball. So I want to talk about the offensive line. I want to talk about establishing the line of scrimmage and making sure that, you know, we come back to Harbaugh ball, because that's kind of what I was expecting, and I bet you he'd agree with me.
Mark, by the way, I'm looking at the graphic here with your nameplate and your coffee. Are you a behind-the-desk guy when people come into your office? You come around the desk and meet them kind of like face-to-face?
Yeah, you know what? It was a little bit of both, depending on who came in and what it was. You know, if, most of the time I was probably behind the desk, to be very candid. You know, sometimes a player would come in very rarely. When a player came in, depending on who the player was, right? Everything's different. Everything's got a different situation. Jimmy Johnson talked about that years ago.
Yes.
Right? You treat people differently based off how good they are. But I think in that situation, usually what I would do is I'd get up in the morning, and around 6 o'clock, I go down and knock on the head coach's door because I know he's already there. And, you know, in situations where we had something go wrong in a game, I didn't beat up the coach the night of. I just don't think that's a good idea. All I do is I go down after the game's over, go into his locker room or to his area, his coach's area, and sit down and say, here are going to be the questions from the press. So I want to hear what you're going to say, boom, boom, boom. But I'm not about to kind of bring up like, why didn't you just kick the extra point there? And Rizzy, what were you doing? No, I save that for another day, the next day, because the emotions are so high that you want to let them kind of settle down and let's have a real good conversation. Just like I want them to come into my office and say, your third round pick has been terrible. Like, or your second round, or whoever, like, we've got to move on from this guy. Okay, that's good. Let's not do it the night of the game where he gave up the scoring touchdown. Let's do it the next morning where we let our tempers come down a little bit and understand what are we trying to accomplish if we do make a change.
People skills. It's all about people skills, Mark Dominic, and you certainly have those. By the way, everybody, do not just watch the college football playoff this year. Get into the action. VSiN Road to Jansanity Contest. Wow. Football handicap skills will be put to the test. You can win up to $5,000, and the best part, it's free to enter. So your challenge, pick the games against the spread for every round. The contestant with the most picks after the title game wins $5,000. Head over to VSiN.com/Jansanity for the contest rules and to register. Do not wait. The entry deadline is Thursday, December 19th. Visit VSiN.com/Jansanity and let the Jansanity begin. I know the Steelers want to be playing football deep into January. You mentioned you're going to treat people differently when they come into your office. Russell Wilson's walking in. Not a great day offensively. I know they didn't have George Pickens. You lose by 14 in the city of brotherly shove. Now, they got to figure out to turn this offense around with a big one against the Ravens in Charm City. They can wrap up the division. Mark, what's the message for Russ today?
Yeah, I think the message for Russ is, like, let's just make sure we make it as hard as possible that we don't have turnovers, right? Let's talk about how we're going to play and execute a flawless game. Less penalties, less turnovers. Let's not give the Ravens and that offense extra chances. Let's not give Lamar Jackson an extra chance. Let's play smart football, and I think that's the only way you're going to win. Because the Ravens, as we've seen with all the penalties this year, they can beat themselves up. They can make the critical errors because they have been a highly penalized team all season long. So I want the Ravens to beat themselves and let them do that. That's the hope and goal I would have. And let's not give them an extra possession or two during this game, because it's going to be a tough uphill battle anyway. As much as they're just one game apart, you know, if you were to tell me it was the opposite and the Ravens were one game ahead, I wouldn't be surprised to sit there and say, what are the Ravens got to do? But I think this one is all about the details and being executing very well. And for Russ, it's not like I don't want you to take chances with the football, but I want those throws to be 40, 50 yards down the field like a punt, not the other way around.
All right, I only have about a minute to go, but I want to bring in a second-year guy, Will Levis, into your office. He puts mayonnaise in his coffee. He got benched after three picks yesterday in the loss to the Bengals. Mark, what do you say to a young player if we don't know, maybe you don't know as a GM, whether this is going to be your quarterback of the future?
Yeah, I think the only thing you can do is kind of point back at young quarterbacks who struggled early in their career and kind of help remind him. Knowing internally, I don't know if Will Levis, personally, I don't think Will Levis is the future, but I think I'm just trying to build him back up. So, hey, you know what, Troy Aikman stunk, and Dan Marino, well, he didn't stink. But, you know, all these other quarterbacks early in their career, really had lots of struggles. And I would point that to him to sit there and say, you're not alone. Like, this happens. This is part of the process. But even though behind the scenes, I'm looking at the draft, I'm looking at free agency, trying to figure out what am I going to do with this position? Because right now, Will Levis is too much of a roller coaster at a quarterback. And, you know, the fumbles too yesterday, it was a bad day.
I'm just saying, when I knew that he put mayo in his coffee, it was a red flag for me, Mark. That's all I'm saying. I can't be the leader of my football team. When we come back, hour number two, when we get to our game of the week by Lowe's, that's next here on the Lombardi Line.